All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we got Mr. Tom Shepstone on the line with us. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Good to see you, Jason. We haven't talked in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, and you're still doing a fabulous job with your writing and keeping everybody informed with your publications. Now, you're on the New York side of the border?
No, I'm on the Pennsylvania side. But
Pennsylvania
right,
side, okay.
Right.
And we just had Jim Willis on.
Yes.
Last week from the Marcellus Drilling News, getting an update on the New York governor who is doing what Jared Polis did, basically putting a war out on oil and gas, an open war on oil and gas. I don't know if she's actually used the word war like Jared Polis out of Colorado actually used the word.
Yeah.
But she's fining the oil and gas companies upwards of $1 trillion or so. Tom, take it over. What's going on, man?
Well, it's an outrageous publicity stunt as far as I'm concerned. I don't think it'll ever pass judicial muster. And I think you're going to see it really come down to just being a brief attempt by her to try to get some publicity that'll endear her to her extremist environmental constituency, which is composed of two parts. One is you got a lot of true believers in New York who are clearly of that mindset to believe that, in fact, we are threatened by climate change. That, as Joe Biden said, today or yesterday, that it's an existential threat. You know, a lot of New Yorkers take that view, particularly anybody what I would call east of the Hudson. Okay, anybody east of the Hudson is vulnerable to that. The other part of it is you've got a lot of the NGOs are headquartered in New York, and especially the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is nothing more than an offshoot of the Rockefeller family. They operate under a number of different names, including the Open Space Institute and the Catskill Mountain Keeper. And, of course, they also are heavily involved in other NGOs such as the World Wildlife Federation and you name it. I mean, the Rockefellers are involved in every NGO activity you can imagine in New York, and as well as elsewhere, but it's particularly in New York. So you've got a lot of pressure on her from these true believers and the Rockefellers to show she's really being aggressive, you know, and in the same way that Gavin Newsom is being aggressive. The end result is that it hurts ordinary New Yorkers who have not, you know, completely revolted yet. They, you know, they reelected her, not by much, but they did reelect her. And I think if she runs again, she's going to have a tough time because we saw how well Trump did in New York this time. He did much better than previously. So I think she's kind of thrashing around, trying to shore up her credentials with what has been her ordinary constituency, which is very, you know, wealthy people that are involved in NGOs and the true believers who are also mostly wealthy. Most of them are trust funders. So that's what you got going on in New York. And I had hopes that she might change her attitude a little bit on that whole CO2 fracking thing. I'm sure that Jim Willis talked to you about that. She had an opportunity. She waited a long time to make her decision. And what that tells me is that she really didn't want to do it. But I think at the end of the day, the NRDC gang, as I call them, I think put a lot of pressure on her and she caved. So.
You know, what's interesting about the what's going on in the natural gas world is these AI data centers.
Yes.
When you take a look at where a lot of them are now being proposed and being built, they're next to a natural gas field, and in some cases they're trying now to hook up to nuclear. I saw where they're, I think Microsoft's trying to bring out Three Mile Island again.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And so and the bottom line is that these data centers need major energy more than they ever thought, and it's, yeah, like somebody forgot to carry the one twice, and that's how much energy. And in my neck of the woods, Tom, what's happening is in Williston, which you may be familiar with because of the Bakken oil field. That's, yep, that's kind of the center of the, yep, Bakken oil field. And they've got a data center there. I think it's Atlas is the name of the AI. And basically, you know, the bill was here for 20 years for that community. The AI center comes in, now it's here. And they want all these people to basically pay for this. So it's a new subsidy now. It's a new subsidy that's going to, you know, Bill Gates and his AI center and that sort of thing. And so you have natural gas now being tied to these AI centers, which is, I mean, these data centers, which is it's a new move. It's a new strategy. Have you been following that at all?
Some, and I think you're seeing this happening all across the country, as you implied. For example, on the nuclear side, Talen Energy, which was originally part of what we call Pennsylvania Power and Light at one time, now PPL, they have a plant in Berwick, Pennsylvania, and there was a plan to, I don't know if it was Microsoft or Google, I think it was Google, but they were going to, you know, have a contract with them, locate there and have a contract. But I think our Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission put the nix to that. And there's also been discussion about Indian Point in New York State on the Hudson, which is another nuclear site. So they're clearly looking at this, and the natural gas, yes, they're looking for that all over the place, which is good for natural gas. But we have to be careful. You know, it's the kind of thing where, as you say, they end up negotiating too many special benefits. And a good example of this, I think I was talking to my wife earlier about the post office, okay, and the postal service, I should say. And the postal service now is, you know, when you get your mail, 3/4 of it at a minimum is junk. And the most important thing they do from a physical perspective is they deliver Amazon products. Okay. Now I'm not against that. But I don't think Amazon's paying their freight the way they should. And that's what you're seeing in the energy thing too. I think Amazon's getting a special deal from the Postal Service because they desperately need revenue. And so they're giving them a deal. Just like Walmart treats its vendors, you know, and so they're in the same position as Walmart vendors, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to see that with these AI centers. They're going to be so powerful, and that's why the effort in Pennsylvania to get a special deal at the Talen Energy facility in Berwick has not happened, at least not yet. I think because everybody surmised that the rate problem was going to be an imposition on ordinary ratepayers. You know, so
another thing that we saw in North Dakota, which is kind of a little bit of a testing ground for a lot of these different programs and et cetera, is so you have the natural gas and the AI data center, and now they are being forced to be tied to a carbon pipeline,
yes,
which is exactly the same thing that happened with oil and gas, which is now tied to ethanol, which is now tied to the carbon pipeline. They've created these two little triangle things that these three industries now are going to be tied at the hip. And and so if you question one, well, now you've got two other industries coming at you and that sort of thing. So you said yes, so you answered my question. Have you noticed this? So you have. So pontificate and expand a little bit on your observations, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I think there's an awful lot of corporatism in America and around the world these days. And I think that's what you're seeing with all this stuff is you're seeing a lot of people who start out with a lot of wealth, and they're the elites. They're the elites of the world, the globalists, if you will, whatever term you want to use. I see a lot of special deals being made through government and between companies that are kind of freezing out again, the ordinary player. And what you're seeing is with that is everything is getting bigger, you know, more mergers and all that. You know, we've seen in our region, we've seen, I don't want to mention names, but we've seen one very excellent producer merge with another one. And now it's it's still a good company, but it's a lot more bureaucratic. Okay. And it won't be long before that's gobbled up by some bigger company yet. And then it'll be even more bureaucratic and it'll be more corporatist. And I think the whole thing with corporatism, which is hard to explain to people, but I think the best way to look at it is it's a merger of big business and government. And we're just seeing that all over the place, you know. And everybody talks about, well, we need to have incentives. We need to have incentives for the carbon thing, for carbon putting it underground, you know. And so, or whatever, or piping it wherever. And that ends up being another damn subsidy. You know, we're just seeing subsidy after subsidy after subsidy. And unfortunately, too many people in the energy world have fallen for it, including oil and gas companies.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I just got off an interview with Terry Edom from Canada. Oh, yeah. He's with, he's a fantastic interview. The BOE report he writes for. And I went off on a little bit of a soapbox tangent, and I haven't done that in a while, because listen, I'm a big fan of solar energy, but I'm not a big fan of what they're doing. Like, I like building homes facing south so you can get the passive energy, and that'll decrease your energy bills. I don't mind little solar panels for certain things. You know, it's nice when you're camping, and it's nice when you've got to do some minor things. Sure, you bet. You know, the water fountain, bird bath type solar, you know, things. You bet. Absolutely. Wind, I think the Amish are more advanced than we are. Yes, for what the energy is that they put in and what they get back, they are kicking our butt when it comes to energy efficiency. The
what
Amish are kicking. Oh, they are. Absolutely. They could have a windmill built in a weekend, man, and it'll power their pole barn and give them water. We can't even stop it from killing whales and birds and all kinds of things. So
have you written an article about that yet? You
no, I have not. I should, though, because I've been spouting that for 10, 15 years.
I love that. I may steal that if you don't
mind.
Oh,
please do. I mean, it's I think it's fantastic, because it is true. When you actually sit down and think about it, the Amish are more advanced than we are. Okay, so with that being said, you know I'm a big fan of the oil and gas industry for a variety of reasons. I'll even look the other way on certain things, because I grew up in agriculture. And agriculture, it was the most dangerous industry for a long time. It was the most subsidized industry for a long time. So you had to learn to accept certain things that you did not like, that sort of thing. And I can tell you right now, there's something going on in the oil and gas industry I do not like, and it has to do with enhanced oil recovery. Because in some areas, like in Texas, it works really well. It works fantastic. But like in North Dakota, they still haven't figured out the secret sauce yet. And all they need now is another $4 trillion. So the same dozen people who pay themselves $2 million a year can keep going to the same conferences to post on social media how great of fun they're having and how much money they're spending. The reason I bring it up is because there's a certain sector of the oil and gas industry that is becoming the solar and wind industry, which is over promising and under delivering and saying, just give us more money. Sorry, that's my little soapbox. Tom, I don't know if you agree or disagree, but go ahead.
I agree with you. And I see that with the whole carbon sequestration thing. I see a lot of that there. And if you look at Canada, and again, I think Canada is doing several things correctly on the oil and gas front. And it's encouraging to see some of the things that they've done and moving their pipelines to completion and so on and so forth, and involving the indigenous peoples, which I think gives them a lot of credibility, you know, street cred, so to speak. All that's great. And I love, you know, sharing articles on it. But one thing I notice is they're constantly bragging about how much money they're putting into carbon sequestration, you know, and is it justified? I don't know. I'm not against the concept, you know, but it's as you described it. It's exactly as you described it. I mean, everybody's looking to put billions or trillions into it. And it's all based on a premise that carbon dioxide is a huge threat to the world. And it's not. It's not. We have, you know, we have really quite low carbon or CO2 at the present time compared to, you know, past periods. And Dr. William Happer from Princeton has made that pitch many times, pointing out and using all the data to show that CO2 is not a threat. And whether it's causing some warming, so what? We've had warming and cooling, and anything can happen over the next several years, several decades. And it's changed many times in my lifetime. The climate has changed. So the pretense of that's behind all this, the premise that's behind it, I should say, is that we've got this threat with CO2. And I'm sure when you discussed it with Jim, you know, CO2 is what's greening the earth, increasing production. CO2 is the stuff of life. I mean, we learned that in grade school, for crying out loud. We learned it's the stuff of life.
Building block of life, yep.
Yeah, and so why we're pretending that this is such a dangerous thing, and yet what's happened is it's just accepted. It's accepted. Nobody questions the premise. And that kind of goes back to, I'm rambling here, but I used to be a fan of listening to Rush Limbaugh, you know, and I think he was not as he readily admitted, he was not a great student. I don't think he ever went to college or graduated from college anyway, but he was a brilliant man. And one of the things he often did, and why he was so effective, he would often say, look at the premise, look at the premise, you know. And that's what you need to do, is when you look at the premise, you realize that it's all highly questionable. You know, even if we say CO2 does cause warming, and even if we admit that warming is a threat, which I don't agree with either of those things or accept them, but let's assume it is, we still don't know how much of any warming that we have is CO2 related and how much is not. We have no idea. The best scientists in the world, the ones who are claiming it's an existential threat, still can't tell us what the percentage is that would be natural and what's the percentage that's man-made. And we just saw, I think you've probably seen the memes too. I think it's a great meme. I'm going to focus it on, I put it in one of my posts, that, you know, California with these fires just released more CO2 in the air than probably they could ever deal with in 100 years, you know. So it's the same thing with the volcanoes, of course. So we're just living in a crazy world where we're doing really crazy things, and we're just accepting these premises that aren't true. And it's a lot of it's just because we want to get money out of it or power out of it. I'm kind of going off on a rant myself.
No, here. That's okay, because it can happen so easy. And
it does.
And for me, here I am, this, former altar boy and yep. Catholic school boy and Sunday school teacher. And then, of course, I hit the age of reason and left the church and all that different stuff like that, and came back and back and forth and all these different things. But, you know, I have read the Bible twice. And when COVID came out, I was really surprised there wasn't more people of faith that were coming forward. It just really shocked me, because, like I said, when I grew up around that, you see these different personalities and all these different things. And Tom, I got to be honest, and this is a very eerie thing, and I don't want to dive too deep into this. I just want to skim the surface and then go into Doug Burgum, the new Interior Secretary, because that transitions into the carbon sequestration, into the new administration. But I do just want to point something out for people, because I had a very odd kind of, it would be, I guess, an ecumenical conversation with somebody that went off on a tangent. And he was a God-fearing Christian, he said. And we started talking about this, and he was going off on this carbon because he's fighting the carbon people. And the way he was talking, and it's on his land, and so they're trying to eminent domain his land so that they can pump all the carbon underneath it. And he doesn't want that, you know, and they do, you know, and so tough, move your family's land, right? We want that property. So anyway, we were talking this and that, and he started getting all kind of, you know, churchy on me, if you will. And I said, well, I go, honestly, when you take a look at the way the world is going, if you go ahead and Google for an airline ticket right now, it'll tell you your carbon footprint. And what they're doing right now with restaurants and Uber Eats and DoorDash is you're going to actually pay based on the carbon footprint of the meals and how long it takes the DoorDash person. That's going to be all calculated in with AI, and your price is going to be fluctuated going forward based on that. And I told him, I said, you know, honestly, the carbon number, or the atomic number of carbon, is six. Six protons, six neutrons, six electrons. I go, my Bible told me to be careful of the 666 number that's going to control everything that we do. We're not going to be able to buy, sell, or do anything without the mark of that beast. And he goes, you just sent chills down my spine.
You just did me too. I've got to
That it surprised me. There's nobody in the in the world of a person of faith has stepped forward with that either. And folks, you can go look it up. Look up the atomic weight. Look up the atomic number, and it's 666, six electrons, six neutrons, six protons, and that's what the weight of carbon is. So I don't want to get too much into that. We'll have to revisit that.
No. I know, but it's very interesting. And I think what we're seeing is, you were touching on it there, we're seeing that people are blindly accepting things. That's what happened in COVID. I mean, my wife and I, we each got the first two shots. I regret it now. I wish we hadn't, you know, but we were kind of, we thought it was the right thing to do at the time. As it turns out, it wasn't, I think. And we were really sold a bill of goods. It did the whole vaccination, you know, scheme. And I'm not against vaccines at all. You know, I'm a little more skeptical maybe of flu and things like that, but I'm not against them. Of course, they've done fantastic things for mankind, but we've got to be a lot more careful about this. We're just blindly accepting stuff. And it's just like with the whole FBI thing and the January 6th and all that. And again, I don't want to get too deeply into that, but look at how we have our agencies, like the FBI, have all these tens of thousands of employees and only a handful of whistleblowers that will come out and say what's really going on. The rest just blindly go along, you know. And we see that in so many agencies and so many organizations. We're like sheep before the slaughter, you know. And when we saw what happened to the Canadian truckers and what, you know, Trudeau did to them, that was simply outrageous, you know, using the ability to shut down their banking accounts, which was eventually overruled, but the damage was done, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I contributed money to their account, and but I noticed a lot of people did. But also, a lot of people, I ran into somebody, like, you know, maybe 3 weeks after all that happened, and I mentioned something about it. And I can't remember what individual it was, but he was a fairly well educated guy, and I mentioned about the whole trucking thing, and he was dumbfounded. He didn't know a thing about it. Didn't know a thing about it. How could that be? How can an intelligent person not know what happened? And we are, this whole thing is just coming down on us like a wet blanket. And I ran this morning a video, published a video by a fellow by the name of the McMaster from England. And he writes on a lot of different things, a funny guy. But he bought, to make a long story short, he bought an EV, a Porsche Taycan, which is a very expensive EV, and he's been writing about it ever since, telling how terrible a decision it was that he bought it. And he's writing about the, you know, the same sort of thing, and he's saying, you know, what's happening is, it's really destroying our freedom of movement and our right to travel, you know. And mm-hmm. and he pointed out in this example that now he's been told he cannot put his EV on a ferry that takes him over to Europe, which he likes to do, to take different excursions and things like that. And he'd done it before. Now the ferry is telling him, no, it's too dangerous. You can't put it on our ferry. So he's being, what it's doing, it's restricting his travel, you know, and the same thing's happening with the whole 15-minute cities and all this stuff. There's no question that there's a hatred of rural America inherent in a lot of this stuff. I grew up on a farm too, a dairy farm. I don't know what kind of farm you grew up on, but hard life, you know, and couldn't make any money at it, but it was a good life in many ways. And I'm glad I had it, you know. But what we're seeing now is a dichotomy between rural and urban. And I think that's one of the great divides in America, is that the urban society does not understand how food is made, does not produce, does not understand how energy is produced. So they're vulnerable to demagoguery on those points. And that's again, part of the blindness that we have. So I'm glad for your program, and what I do and many others do. We're trying to get the word out to some of those people, and I think the recent election showed us that there is a bit of an awakening occurring, that people are getting smarter about some of this stuff. We're seeing, worldwide rejection in country after country of the whole green program. The EVs are not work; it's not working out as they hoped. So there is, and the vaccine hesitancy is certainly there. Maybe too much, even in some respects. I don't know, but the point is, we're all becoming a little smarter, and we're realizing that we've been fed a lot of crap, in the media and by our institutions. Our institutions are corrupted. Our media is corrupted, and so we have to kind of build it back up again from the ground up. I enjoy reading Solzhenitsyn. I've read several of his books. I've got another one on my desk to read it soon. And one of the things he, talks about over and over and over again is the importance of samizdat, which is, if you can't get your message out through the conventional media, you have to find ways. And they used to write all kinds of things on cigarette paper and pass it around little tubes. And that's how they brought down the Russian, the Soviet Union. That's how it was brought down, So we have to kind of do the same thing, and I think it's happening. So that's the optimistic side of
Well,
my
that's what
rant.
they say. The first thing that they do when they go to war is they take out the communication tower. It's generally the first thing that happens, and whatever the modern day communication tower is, whether it's, your Wi-Fi router or whatever. Wi-Fi router would be more of a mainstream computer than that. But Energy Security Freedom is the name of the Substack page. Tom Shepstone is the guest, and we were talking a little bit about some of the administration changes happening. And I want to start with Doug Burgum, former North Dakota governor, who I've known on a variety of levels for over 20 years. And then Chris Wright from Liberty Energy will be the energy. And then if we have time and interest, maybe Linda McMahon as the energy secretary, just because you're an East Coast man. They wouldn't mind getting your opinion on that left field weird appointment or nomination there. She wasn't too happy from what I read. She wanted to be the small business administrator again. But anyway, Doug Burgum as the interior secretary, and sounds like there's a little bit of some holdup now too. But my guess is he'll probably get the nomination anyway, one way or another. But
Yeah, I think so too.
have you followed him much? Do you know much
A little
about
bit.
him?
I don't know a lot about him, but I do know, again, the fact that he's from the Midwest and from oil country, speaks well, I think, and he'll have an understanding of the issues. And I have a one of my best friends has spoken to him frequently about energy issues and had several lengthy conversations with him. And he tells me that he is a good guy, and he's looking forward to what he's going to do, but he's a little hesitant about one thing, and that is that Burgum is a fan of carbon sequestration. Okay, so and so he wants to push that particular issue, and that worries me a little bit because I don't think that's where the emphasis should be. I think the emphasis should be on reducing the federal dominance of what we do with our land. I love our parks and all that as much as anybody, but I think we've just gone too far with it, and we saw that with the Biden administration, and before that with the Obama administration, and before that with the Clinton administration, that everybody just seems to want to protect more and more land without it understanding the consequences, and leaving the local people out of it in terms of the control. The states are kind of rendered, they're neutered, so. Which is not right. And I think that's where Bergen, I think Bergen would be particularly effective at dealing with that issue. And that's where he should be focusing his attention. I think carbon sequestration is kind of a, and again, I'm not necessarily against it, but it just doesn't rise to the priority that these other issues rise to. And it kind of, it's like admitting there's a problem. It's like saying me too on the whole climate thing in a way. And I don't like that part of it. But I think he'll probably, on balance, do a good job. Chris Wright, fantastic appointment. Who could be better than Chris Wright? I think you'll recall a few years ago how I forget what exactly he did, but I mean, he essentially spoofed everybody, with one of his incidents, and I can't remember the details.
North Face.
That's it. Yes. He went after North Face. That was a fantastic episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, where he they rejected him, and so he rejected them back.
Yes.
Basically, yeah.
So
Yeah.
he's a brilliant guy. He's a brilliant guy. I think he'll do a fantastic job. As for Linda McMahon, education secretary, she'll probably do okay. I mean, we should frankly get rid of the department. I mean, that's the bottom line.
That's what she'll probably do. That's what I thought when she was nominated. I thought, well, boy, I guess if you want to get rid of Common Core and want to get rid of the education department and that sort of thing, because she's a pretty conservative Republican. Yeah,
I think
she'd be more on the Ron Paul side than the Mitch Romney side, Mitt Romney side for
I
sure.
think she'd have a pretty good legacy if she presided over getting rid of it. I question whether that's feasible, but I'd like sure like to see it happen. I'd love to
Well,
see.
here's the some of the concerns with Governor Burgum when it comes to the interior and even energy overall is first and foremost, like his allegiance are basically to Bill Gates. He's a Bill Gates disciple.
I've heard that.
And yeah, and the joke around North Dakota is the only man that spent more time in the governor's office than Doug was Bill, you know, and the state of North Dakota is basically one of the ones that put together the carbon pipeline. And so we've got all these politicians that are investors in it, and they brought Harold Hamm in as an investor. They're responsible basically. So there's many people that thought Burgum was going to be the energy secretary to babysit this project specifically. But as the interior, he'll still be able to do that. And it makes a little more sense because out in western North Dakota, he has the Theodore Roosevelt Library, Teddy Roosevelt Federal Library he's trying to build. And he's moving ahead with it. And oh, it's a subsidy machine for years and years and years for all of his big contract buddies and this and that. And it'll probably be gorgeous and it'll, you know, who knows what it'll do. But, you know, western North Dakota, there's like 1,000 people that live out there. So it's not like it's going to be heavily attended, but
It's all just more corporatism. That's what it is.
it
It's all.
is. So Burgum is going to bring in a lot of corporatism, and I'll be perfectly honest, I can say this after 12 years of covering him in politics that he really doesn't care about the oil and gas industry. He cares about technology and advancing his personal interests, and if the oil and gas industry benefits from it, that's okay. That's an offshoot. But those are not the number one priority.
I
The
see.
number one priority is the data and tech because he gets government contracts through his tech companies.
Yeah,
And yeah,
interesting.
so
Interesting.
it's, but I think oil and gas will do well under him. I do. Because he needs those for the data centers and
Yeah,
that sort of
right.
thing. Chris Wright, I agree with you. I think he'll be a fantastic pick. I actually think he's about right for being able to defend the industry too, because he stood up to ESG in a way that I felt was the best way to stand up for ESG, which is put out reports showing all the ESG stuff you're doing without calling it ESG. That's the best way to do it, is just say, yeah, we're already doing this stuff. We don't need to have some label that's going to put a score on us so that you can put me out of business by putting a financial lien on me.
You know, there's another guy who is not being appointed, but very interesting guy, Nick DeLulis, who is the CEO of CNX, to be a coal company, is now an oil and gas company. And he's written a book, I forget the name of it right now, but excellent book. I read it. I don't agree with everything he says, but I thought it was a good book, and I think he's a great leader. And one of the things he's doing with CNX, which is really doing well, is he calls it radical transparency. So where he kind of lays everything out, no holds barred in terms of the whole fracking thing and all that. And I think that's a smart way to go, rather than trying to polish things with PR, it's just Radical transparency is a good concept, and I would like to see a guy like that involved in government at some point too. But we, again, I don't want to see him leave CNX either. But so there are good people out there.
Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Chris Wright for the Energy Department is supposed to be nominated, and it looks like 10 a.m. Thursday for Doug Burgum. And Scott Turner at 10 a.m. too, the former NFL player. Sorry, he was just listed right underneath there, so I wanted to I recognize that name. Herschel Walker too. I saw he was picked for one of Trump's positions too. I did want to ask you about the DOGE, the Department of Government
Efficiency.
Waste, or what's it called?
Efficiency.
Government
Efficiency.
Efficiency.
Well,
What do you make of that? What do you make of the
I
DOGE?
think it's a great idea, and I do like Ramaswamy. I think he's very, very good, very smart guy. And I've come to like Elon Musk. I've written a lot of negative stuff about him in the past because he's a big time corporatist. There's no doubt about it. But he did the world, and I think he's still got more corporatism planned. And I worry about him and Ramaswamy, to be honest with you, looking out more for big tech in the government than efficiency. But having said all those worries, Elon Musk did just a huge favor for democracy and Western civilization by taking over Twitter. I mean, you just can't deny that. And he's been red-pilled to a certain extent. How much, of it is real, I really don't know. And there's also speculations about his China connections and all that. So, it's not 100% good, but you have to look at, and I don't like him having, I don't want any one man having too much influence in the Trump administration other than Donald Trump. So that's a worry too. So having said all that, you just have to admire Musk. I mean, he is the richest man in the world. He's a brilliant guy. He's on the spectrum, and as a result, he's exceedingly bright, but a little awkward in the way he goes about things, which is fascinating to me, very, really fascinating. And he has just shown a lot of it's either a lot of courage or an incredible a lot of fakery. I don't know. I think it's courage. I hope it's courage in taking on the sacred cows of our world, which is and Twitter. I enjoy Twitter now. I really enjoy it. And I find a lot on there that I like, a lot I don't, but it's open, it's open. And he really threatened the underpinnings of everything that you and I are worried about. He really threatened that. And I think where we'd be without him having taken over Twitter. Think about
Yeah.
it. I mean, it's amazing. And the things he's done, that he's gone after Keir Starmer, who richly deserves to be thrown out of office in England and all that, and he's gone after him and others as well. And that's what needs to happen. We got to speak plainly about these issues, So he's doing some of that. I think we need to be cautious with him and with Ramaswamy too, because everybody's got their own interests. There's nobody, including you and me, that do not have special interests, okay? And so we all have to be careful when we're dealing with one another. To make sure those special interests aren't controlling everything. And of course, the bigger the special interest, the more dangerous it is. So it's just a matter of I guess I'm thrilled with how it's happened, all this, but I'm also, I'm willing to be skeptical, particularly, and the H-1B1 thing too is another, another issue too.
We've got quite a few people that are going to be nominated on Wednesday and Thursday. And I'm not sure when the inauguration is around the corner. Usually it's around the 20th or 19th or something like that. I don't know.
20, yeah.
20th, 20th.
Yeah.
But we have one president on his way out. And I got to tell you, it seems like every day or two, I'm posting a new story that he's banning oil here. He's
Yeah,
banning
yeah.
oil here. He's got this.
Yeah.
Boy, it sure seems like he is throwing a torch on that bridge of gasoline on the way out of town, man. Holy
Oh, there's
cow.
no question about it. And again, I don't think he's smart, or I shouldn't say this. I don't think he knows what's even going on. He mouths the words, but it's obviously his whoever's really president among the bureaucracy of the White House, whoever that is, is are they're the people having the calling the shots. And
You know, it's so weird when you can, when we live in a world where you can actually say, how many Joe Bidens do you think we've seen? And you can honestly say three or four because of the earlobe size, because of actual legitimate biometric features that are really difficult to you know, to they're really hard to mimic. And here they're just parading about in front of us. And I started thinking about that going, I bet we've seen four or five different Bidens. I wonder how many. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, well, now we're really going off the deep end. So,
Well, I've seen the movie Dave ever since then. You know, I know
oh,
about stunt doubles. Oh, yeah.
yeah, that's
Well,
great.
we'll go with that. That sounds
All right, very
good.
good.
But anyway, so what do you think about what he's doing on the way out of town?
I think it's terrible. And I again, I think it's a lot like Kathy Hochul. They know a lot of it won't stick, that'll be reversed by Trump, but they'll cause trouble. They'll cause time and delays and cost of money, because you have to then, somebody will go to court and try to say you can't undo this, and then you have to fight it, and it takes 6 to 8 months and maybe a year even before you get the word that yeah, you can do it. So in the meantime, it's like what the Democrats are doing today with the Pete Hegseth, defense nominee. I mean, they're just trying to smear and trying to delay. And I hate to be so political about it, but that's just the truth. It's just the truth.
Well, it's
It does.
interesting too because you mentioned the governor of New York, her publicity stunt and the trillions. Biden's doing what he's doing, which is well over trillions. And if they don't hold up, they still cost litigation money. They still cost time money. And I was talking with Warren Martin from Kansas Strong the other day. And have you seen Landman at all? Have you seen
I
any?
just saw clips. I didn't see the
So,
film.
the one thing that was very eye-opening to me was the attorneys, because I've worked in a lot of different industries before, and it didn't dawn on me until I was watching Landman that like everybody has an attorney, and I'm like, that's actually true in oil and gas. Like, there's there's so many attorneys everywhere because every step of the along the way is extremely important and is extremely litigious, and that sort of thing. And so Warren and I were just kind of scatting back and forth a little bit about that revelation about the attorneys. And he mentioned that he worked in 25 years in different businesses. He comes to the oil and gas world, and all of a sudden, in 3 months, attorneys are being called in the 25 previous years. He's never had an attorney in a meeting one time, And so just to accentuate that. And then, of course, when you have the Democrats doing publicity stunts that cost trillions of dollars and that sort of thing, or billions of dollars in litigation, I wonder on a pie chart how much money goes to attorneys in a gallon of gas.
That's an interesting question.
That would be an interesting question, wouldn't it? I mean, to actually, I'm not talking about lobbyists, who many of them are attorneys. I mean, stupid litigation on the sage grouse and the prairie chicken. And this publicity stunt here, and Jared Polis, and that sort of thing. I bet it'd be higher than people think.
I bet it would too. And I say that as someone who gets a lot of his business as a consultant from attorneys. I get a lot of referrals from attorneys, and particularly doing expert witness testimony on land use issues and things like that. But other things too, applying for permits. I do a lot of that kind of thing. And you're right. And of course, I'm part of the problem too. Because I'm the person they use to help make their case.
So you bring up this much of that gallon of gas. Okay, that's the Tom Shipstone slice of the pie right there. Oh yeah, that's something else. But well, as we kind of wrap up here, anything we missed, anything we want to make sure we plug that you got going on?
Well, I just think this whole California fire situation
Oh
is
yeah.
very illustrative of some of the problems we have. And look what California is doing. I mean, what we're hearing about now, in the midst of all this terrible tragedy, The legislature decided to spend $50 million. They started out at 25 and they compromised at 50 to spend fighting Trump over God knows what, you know. And in the midst of all these problems, that's what they decided to do, you know. And you see the governor, you know, is still promoting the EVs and the green energy, and it's been a disaster for them, an absolute disaster. Highest electricity prices in the lower 48 states, you know, and yet they don't want to stop. They just want to go full speed ahead. And I think, you know, it's a collision course. I mean, I'm kind of hopeful, actually. I think a lot of people are going to wake up as a result of this. So, out of tragedy, maybe something good will happen. You know, people will become more awakened, more woke in the right way.
More
How's that?
woke in the right way. I still like your line that DEI is DIE.
Yeah, right.
Did. Well,
Right.
sir, I appreciate the time today. EnergySecurityFreedom.substack.com. Is that right?
Yep.
All right, I got my memory intact here. Well, we'll have to have you back here real soon. And
Look forward to it.
all right, man. We'll take care. We'll catch you later.